All right, it's a bank holiday here in the United Kingdom, the Sceptred Isle, but there's no rest for us.
No rest. No rest.
We're back, baby.
We're back.
We're back to serve sports fans everywhere. It's a Gavin Jewell show. Let's get this on the road. We're going to talk Jana August Fjortoff, a bit of Bundesliga, a bit of quick hits, a bit of the S team.
S team.
Really, really excited about.
Yeah.
But we got to start with an update of what's going on around Europe because football is inching its way back. We've had confirmation over the weekend, Jules, from La Liga. Tebas saying again that, reconfirming. Well, Tebas talks constantly, obviously.
Yeah.
He says we're going to have games every single day. They got the approval. I think it's going to be, is it the 11th that they're going to start?
Yeah.
11th of June? Will officially be the next big league back. I mean, Portugal is coming back the week before, but, you know, among the big five, obviously, they are second out of the gate. You're excited. You're hyped. You're amped.
Yeah. Yeah. And to be fair, you could, as we've said many times, Tebas is not perfect. And in many respects, he talks a lot and talks very often and doesn't always make sense. But I think that he dealt with this pandemic very well. And the way everything seemed under control for La Liga, they're allowed to play again after June the 8th. The government gave them the green light. The first game will be June the 11th, as you said, and probably be the Sevilla derby as well. So great way to start again, to resume the season with Betis against Sevilla. And then, as you said, a game every day, that's the plan. Some will kick off late, some a bit early, depending on where you are in the world as well. But I think we can all get excited behind closed doors, obviously. So it will need a bit of time to adapt, I think, a bit like we saw in the Bundesliga. But look, Bundesliga second weekend and already the intensity was there. The spectacle was there. There was less injuries. And everything seems to be working well, apart from the fact that there was no fans. So I think we can expect the same from La Liga, hopefully.
Now, Serie A, we will know on May 28th. That's kind of like the big day when we'll get confirmation one way or the other. But the sports minister coming out, speaking over the weekend, he's effectively sounded very, very bullish. And since he was the guy putting the brakes on all this, and now he's okay with it, that certainly looks very promising. The medical protocol is out, and it's been agreed upon. Just needs the final rubber stamp. So everybody's hopeful there. They're going back to contact training as well. Premier League is, and since you're probably wondering, I think they're shooting in Serie A, they're shooting for June 13th or June 20th start date, which leaves the Premier League, which I think in some ways incredibly, although maybe it's not so incredible because obviously they were hit as hard as Italy and Spain, and they were hit later, so maybe we can allow them a little bit more time. I think at this stage it's going to be, while officially they're still trying for June 12th, this is not going to happen. June 12th time to train, have full contact training. We're looking at June 19th or June 26th, meetings on Wednesday and Thursday to try to push this forward. They did another round of testing, and there were two positive tests out of nearly 1,000. This time they extended the pool out to 50 per club. Obviously, this isn't just players. This is also backroom staff and whatnot. There is a positive test at Bournemouth. One thing I don't understand, Jules, the guy at Bournemouth who tested positive is a player. So obviously, this is a guy who was tested the first time around in the first round of tests and must have tested negative back then. Should we just believe that maybe he got infected in the meantime? Or we shouldn't worry about the quality of the test, right?
No, I don't think the quality of the test is in question here. But you're right, it's a bit strange to have tested negative on Sunday and Monday and then positive on Thursday and Friday the following week, which when was the last two, the last batch of tests was last week, Thursday and Friday. So, maybe a bit surprising, but he's gone into self-isolation on his own. The rest of the team, the squad, will keep practicing by small groups, as is the rule now, and the clubs are allowed and players are allowed. There's another case at Watford, which is a bit concerning for Watford because they had a few issues there between players who don't want to train, go back training, the ones who are positive, even if they are symptomatic like Mariapa. But it seems that, you know, in Watford, they've had a few cases. But again, I think everything is under control. And then it'd be very interesting to see the next step now, what's happening this week in terms of the protocol. Once again, we're back there. where everybody will have to agree to it. Training with contact as well would be the next phase at some point. So it seems again that everything is on track. I agree with you. I think June 12th is far too early, but 19th for me, more 26th is probably the right date. So, but you know what? What I like is I don't mind that the leagues are staggered, you know, and you start with the Bundesliga and they had a couple of weekends, or they will have 3 weekends by themselves and it's great and everybody focus on them and everybody watches them. Then you'll have La Liga back and you'll have the two Bundesliga and La Liga back together and we can watch one and the other and et cetera. And the games hopefully won't clash too much. Then Serie A will come in a couple of weeks later, maybe, and then maybe the Premier League. And then by the end of June, beginning of July, we'll have all four big leagues together. But I think I like it that the fact is one after the other and not all at the same time.
This has been a problem all along with the Premier League is that because I know Richard Masters gave an interview to the BBC on the conference call before, he really wasn't very forthcoming. So you get all these things leaking out from clubs. One of the things was a story in the Times that they're going to ask every club to have a COVID-19 training coordinator because when they do go to full training, they would like to have, yes, you can have full training, but please minimize contact. And they actually cited clubs that press a lot and play with a lot of intensity, like Liverpool, that maybe they could change their training sessions to make them less intense. This to me sounds like one of the most idiotic things I've heard in a long, long time because, you know, if you're going to ask Liverpool, okay, Liverpool, we want you back, but don't play like Liverpool and don't train like Liverpool.
Just do a rondo of training.
Yeah, I don't get this. It's either full contact training or it's not full contact training, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's like the tackles. Do you remember a couple of weeks ago, there were some people that leaked like, oh, maybe you can train again, but no tackles. I mean, it's either you train and you train normally. If you're not allowed to train normally because it's too early, then you don't train at all, or you keep doing your little rondos or little groups and practice and finishing and whatever. But don't come in and then go like, yeah, okay, train, but you have a few rules. So you can't do this and you can't do that and you can't do that. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think the Premier League, I mean, we said their messaging hasn't been great throughout, but these leaks are coming from Premier League clubs who are in the meetings. And the reason these leaks get so much oxygen is that the Premier League won't speak. So if you bring them up and you say, hey, look, these guys are saying they've told that, you know, Liverpool need to be less intense in the way they play, you know, get Andy Robertson to slow down. Is this true? Like, well, we have no comment on that. We can't put a comment. You know, I'm like, I'm sorry, you're not helping yourself because people are looking at this and they're thinking this is just stupid. You know, going back to Serie A 1 minute, one thing which I think is stupid on their part is they're talking about kickoff times at 4:30, which, okay, Italy's not quite Spain, although parts of Italy do get very hot. If we're going to play in July at 4:30, that's going to be absolutely, absolutely brutal and empty stadiums. I don't need to see that. So if you're listening to the app, please fix it. I know you want to stagger games.
But what's the idea behind 4:30 then? Why can't you have it later, like 5:30 or 6 o'clock? You could have 6 and 8, I guess, no?
They want 4:30 so that they can have 4:30, 6:30, 8:30, you know, something like that.
Yeah,
so
they can
cram games in for TV separately. But you know what? I'd almost prefer, especially in the south of Italy, play at 9:30 in the evening if you have to. You know, gain that extra hour. Like, be smart about this. And also the 4:30 games, you know, the temperature gauges. This is something that they've had for a long time. In the north of Italy, it gets very, very cold in winter. And in the past, it seemingly they never took this into account. So they would, you know, they might schedule games in the north of Italy at night in winter when it's frozen and foggy and do the reverse in the south of Italy. So this is something that I think they need to work on. Joe, jumping back to sticking with Serie A for 1 second. This thing, which I thought was kind of interesting, is that because they have to play a lot of games, there's a ton of games they have to play in Serie A, and because there's still concerns that, you know, if there is an outbreak and they're going to isolation, the issue of playoffs is back as like a plan B. What they're saying is, okay, if for whatever reason we can't continue or we won't be able to finish all these fixtures and we find ourselves playing into August, what can we do? And so they're studying different formulas of, you know, maybe having just a couple games to go and decide big issues, you know, based on what the table looks like if they have to stop down again. Are you okay with that?
Yeah, I'm okay with that. It's your idea. I know you really like this idea.
Well, you don't have to agree with me. No.
But it makes a lot of sense, especially if you can't play the whole 92 games in England or 107 or 9 games in Italy or, you know, whatever, how many games you have left. But
decided now, decided ahead of time before you go back. I think that's
Yeah. You can't do half one and then finishing with the other. But you know what? Listening to us talking about all of this and having France decided to stop playing what feels like 2 months ago almost, which was far too early and a rush decision, it makes me sad. Not because Ligue 1 is the most spectacular, amazing league, not for that, but because I think there's a lot of football fans there. The players, some of them wanted to go again. And I know Lyon are pushing hard to try to review the decision not to play anymore. I don't think it will go anywhere. But I just think he said they could have taken a bit more time, waited a bit more, and then maybe they would have been able to play a few games. And I just think it's sad.
We're going to get to that in quick hits, Mr. Olas. In fact, we haven't forgotten you. And no. France, of course, could have – you're talking about restarting August 22nd, which could be the surreal situation where you could have Lyon in the Champions League final on August 29th, while at the same time they will have started next year the week before, which I kind of love. Final point, the whole hurdle with the neutral grounds. Again, we touched upon this on Thursday. Police saying you have to play neutral grounds. Clubs saying we're not going to vote in favor if you make us play neutral grounds. Now they're talking about a mixed hybrid model where some games are going to be neutral grounds if they fear that there's going to be fans congregating outside. Look, I've talked about myself blue in the face. I think it's completely idiotic. But at least that's better than having every game in neutral grounds, right?
But, I mean, yeah, it's better. But it's not as good as having games in normal grounds, even behind closed doors. Look at Germany. There's no problem with crowds gathering outside. Let's wait for La Liga to go back. Portugal maybe as well before. See what they do. I guarantee you there will be no gathering outside. Why don't you trust – why don't they trust, you know, English football fans – if you tell them, please don't go. No, but why?
I think you know the history of why English football fans historically have been treated. I know, it is a different time.
Surely Liverpool fans and United and City and every club.
I will say this. If this is the only way to get to a restart, I would actually rather see something where they leave it up to local police to go and make that decision. Local police who know local fans, and if they come out, which they already have this power, but if they come out and say, you know what, it's not safe to play this game in Brighton, for example, at the Amex, this game has to be moved because we fear fans are going to, and I'm citing Brighton on purpose because the Amex, of course, is out in the countryside in the middle of nowhere, and Brighton fans are usually very well behaved. Then we'll go and, you know, we'll go and play this elsewhere. Leave it up to the local authorities. But to have this national edict is just foolish, in my opinion. Okay, we got the bad stuff out of the way. Let's talk about the good stuff. And who better than Jan Aga Fjortoft? Welcome, Jan. Now, tomorrow night is the big clash between Borussia Dortmund and Bayern Munich, which I'm reliably informed no real German fan actually calls Der Klassiker. It's just something stupid that was just invented by the evil marketing people. They both won. This could decide the title. Bayern, of course, going out and scoring big, but also conceding big this weekend. Any concern there, or is it just the magic of Hinteregger?
I was, first of all, as an Eintracht Frankfurt former player, I was very concerned of everything involved with that game because that, again, after the Gladbach game, looked terrible. We look like a defense from a nightmare at the moment. But having said that, I mean, the reason this game tomorrow is great is that everything happened that we hoped this weekend, because it could be a matter of Tuesday night, Bayern Munich being 10 points ahead of Dortmund. Dortmund went to Wolfsburg, a tricky game because Wolfsburg has been good. Glasner's doing well in Wolfsburg, but it was a good game. Dortmund did what they had to do, and Bayern beating Frankfurt, that was not a big surprise. But, I mean, the hope for Dortmund is that Hinteregger, when he can score so many goals, and he's the most scoring defender in top five leagues all around. So I guess there is a hope for Dortmund tomorrow. Is it a title decider? Well, if Bayern wins, it's over. But if Dortmund manage not to lose, they're still in there.
Now, look, I was hopeful here because I thought, Borussia Dortmund have a tall German charismatic defender who's very good in the air and very good on set pieces. And if Bayern defend those corners the way they did, and for those who didn't see it, they conceded twice, I think, in the space of about 5 minutes, turning a 3-0 scoreline into a 3-2 scoreline. And that man, and his name starts with the letter H, like Hinteregger, of course, that's Mats Hummels. But then the guy goes off injured, and Emre Can comes on. How big a blow would Hummels' absence be for Dortmund? Or is it okay because Emre Can's there?
I've said for many years that Hummels is not overestimated because he's a world-class defender, but he's not the best defender. He is a player who loves to go forward, loves his trick. He's a good header of the ball, great passes. But I think one of the reasons I hope for Dortmund that he will play Hummels is also that then you can put Can in midfield, because I think that would be very decisive, because Kimmich looks good for Bayern, and that balance kind of player in there is very important. So I think Can is very needed in midfield, and I think it was good news for them that Can came through, that Sancho again got some minutes scoring goals or scoring goal points as he always do. And so Can is the key. The latest now from Dortmund is that Hummels is 90% fit for the game. So I think that is good news overall for Dortmund.
Jan, where do you think that this game could be won for Dortmund? If Dortmund want to win that game, we saw again Guerrero and Hakimi being in great form at Wolfsburg at the weekend, like they were in the previous weekend. Do you think it could be there if Dortmund can create some 2v1 against Davis and Pavard with their fullbacks or their wingbacks and their wingers? Maybe that's where Dortmund could exploit Bayern's weaknesses. Maybe where do you think they could win that game?
It's a good point, but it's also the mental state of Dortmund, because I think that over the years, we have so many times been thinking of, well, this is the one for Dortmund. Can they take it on again? And then we are disappointed. I think Dortmund took the same analysis this winter and got in with Erling Haaland and Emre Can. They got two players in who have that mental strengthness that they maybe won't go under like they did at Allianz Arena when they lost 4-0 in the first game of the season. But I think that the main thing is that how confident are Bayern going there? Because Bayern will do their pressure. They will have an offensive line who will stand high up there. And then we have the wing-backs coming up for Dortmund, sensational at the moment, how they are playing. And there will be a lot of space for Erling Haaland behind the Bayern defense. And I think that, we are praising Bayern a lot, but Hinteregger, that was dead balls. But I think they could be vulnerable because they're so good going forward. So I think that the fact that Bayern are very confident, that could also play into the hands of Dortmund. And Dortmund, the stats at the moment, is sensational how they're playing. So I just hope that they can get this out in a game against the establishment of Bayern and being that yellow and black challenger that I hope they will be.
Being Italian, I like to play the percentages when there's something important at stake. And early in the second half, they're 3-0 up against Frankfurt at home. Lewandowski is a card away from his suspension. And I'm looking at the TV and I'm saying, like, does he flick fall asleep? Why doesn't he take this guy off? Then they concede those two goals. And I'm like, all right, now it's too late. You need to leave him on. Lewandowski didn't pick up the suspension. But I just thought, did that strike you as odd while you were watching the game? Or is this just the way Flick and Bayern are, that they're so confident and they're like, suspension, whatever. If we have to play Josh Zirkzee or some other weirdo, no problem. Doesn't matter. Let's just leave Lewandowski on there. Let's keep scoring goals.
I think you can compare him a bit with Zinedine Zidane. When they were winning for fun, people said they were winning for fun because Zidane didn't do anything. He just let his players play. And when they lost, the reason they lost was because Zidane just let him play his play. And I think that it's the same with Flick at the moment. I worked the weekend with all the games, and we were always taking forward all these stats, comparing Hans Flick with Pep Guardiola and all the greatest Bayern coaches there's been in terms of scoring goals, winning games, and so on. I think at the moment, Bayern, I must say, they look very, very strong. And we are talking about the wing-back packs of Dortmund. I mean, Alphonso Davies. I mean, that is sensational. It's, what a story it is. And people like that, I mean, that is so good for football. And Lewandowski, he'll be in there. Lewandowski is smart enough. He, no chance that he will get a yellow card. He will just be on there, get his goal, and keep calm, carry on. And then he goes to Dortmund, and he will do his stuff again. And I think that is the easy strategy of Hans Flick and Bayern at the moment. Even Franz Beckenbauer was in stadium now. So now they are all coming back. And Uli Hoeneß was there, Karl-Heinz Rummenigge. Well, this is Bayern of the good old days.
Okay, now, in the build-up to that goal, there was that brilliant dummy from Erling Haaland where he pretended like he was going to strike the ball and then initially missed it, or intentionally missed it. Now, I'm joking here, but obviously, and I think rightly, you stuck up for Erling Haaland last week when there was that cut-up of his interviews after the game where people put together all these situations where he kind of gave one-word answers or brief answers and stuff, and some people were having a go at him. I'm just wondering, if something had gone wrong, Dortmund hadn't won that game, that miss where, you know, that air kick, is this the kind of thing where maybe it would have become an internet meme or something? Would we have found ourselves in that situation where all of a sudden, because the media love to build people up and then tear them down, might that have been sort of the first kind of rough, bumpy patch of his career? Has he experienced anything like that yet? And knowing him a little bit, how do you think he would react? Is this necessary for a player to go through?
Well, first of all, I think that was not the best of games that Erling has done for Dortmund. I think that he, especially in the first half, he was losing a bit too much or too often the ball. He got better in the second half. I think that miss he did. Thank God Guerreiro was there to score that goal, but still he wouldn't have scored because Wolfsburg defender blocked that very well. That has to be said as well. But I think that all the reports from Dortmund shows that Erling Haaland has had sensational tests. He's very well trained. He trained very hard through the corona of time. And then you will get games like this. And I think we should remember the boy is 19. He will have more games that he will play worse than normal. I mean, we can't expect the normality for him to score goals. But still, I think that shows how Dortmund are at the moment. I mean, with the players they have out, now apparently Witzel is on his way back, but still a very, very important player for them. Chan slowly come back. Sancho is there. Brandt looking like a $1 million kind of player. Well, not $1 million. I used to say that. Now they would.
Yeah,
but still.
You're dissing him.
Yeah, but they're much broader there. And I think I saw the comment from Sork, and I agree with him. I mean, that was not a spectacular day for Dortmund, but still they went to Wolfsburg, like I said in the beginning, was being very good, and they looked very good. But it was only one winner at that game. Yes, they had a couple of small chances where Bürki had to save them. But still, it was a very, very good win for Dortmund there.
We all agree that we expect Sancho to start the game tomorrow night, right? Or do you think there may be something and that's why he hasn't started the last two games that Favre is not happy with and he preferred Brandt and Hazard? Or we all agree that Sancho will start tomorrow?
Absolutely. I think that was also a perfect weekend except Hummels going out with an Achilles small injury. He went out. I think that was a perfect weekend. Two perfect games for Dortmund because Sancho maybe it was a bit back in his training fitness for different reasons. And then they wanted to play him a bit at the beginning, which they did. They gave him about 10 minutes in the first game. No, they gave him like 26 minutes or something. And they slowly get him into the game. And you saw Sancho again when he came there. He could have played Erling, but he just waited. And the way he's not like, I don't, he's like unbelievable, the young boy, because he's just like, he's got his timing so right. I mean, we are all so thrilled about this basketball series, you know, with Jordan and the last dance. And I love to make my metaphors on that. But sometimes you just feel that Sancho, he's just letting the ball, not even pass it, he just let the ball roll there in a perfect timing. And people say, I mean, Müller had an assist this weekend and he had one to Goretzka, but that was something else. That was a cross. But Sancho is so clever in what he's doing. And And I think that what you see with Dortmund over the big, big strength is that they have so many alternatives when they go forward. It's not they have to play on the first run or the second run. There's a third run, and then Sancho is the key. And yes, I don't think Favre will dare to leave Sancho out for this big game.
I have to say, I mean, when it comes to Sancho, look, obviously, technically, he's very good. But what strikes me most about him is that combination of athleticism that he has and intelligence. That's just really, really rare, because often you see in young players who are phenomenal athletes, they will rely on the athleticism and maybe the intelligence comes later. It's maybe scrappier people who are more limited who have to try to be clever. He has that intelligence and that athleticism together. He's also obviously very gifted technically, although, you know, maybe that's not his greatest attribute. But I completely agree with you there. When he came on, the timing of that run, the other time that when he basically road graded the fullback, it was pretty sweet to watch. Also sweet to watch for those of us who are drinking the Nagelsmann Kool-Aid, like me. All those stupid people who pointed out, oh, look, 2 points dropped after their ridiculous draw at home. They go out and they punish Mainz 5-0. Again, could have been 5-0 at halftime. Never in doubt, right, Jan? And you want to celebrate Timo Werner a little bit?
Well, it's easy to celebrate Timo Werner. I saw some people made a point out of it. He scored 6 of his goals against Mainz. Okay, that is a lucky opponent. But still, Timo Werner is unbelievable. And he's a great goal getter. We know that. And people sometimes say he's missing it some chances as well. But it's also the amount of chances he comes into. It's unbelievable. And I think what Nagelsmann has managed to do this year, he came and Timo Werner being a great striker, but he's managed to improve his game, his overall game. And you see sometimes he goes deeper, he can get the ball out there, and it's very hard for the defenders, how should you stop him? You know, if you stay one against one, he will beat you on speed. And as you saw by the last goal, I think, with Paulsen just playing him in, and he's just playing on the shoulders of the defenders, it is very, very hard to mark him. And now he's got 24 goals and also a lot of assists, and he's on fire. And I mean, we are talking of timing, and sometimes I think you made a good point with Sancho as well, and it's the same with Werner. Sometimes when we talk about tactic skills, we always talk about teams. How tactically are they? How tactically is the coach? But I think that the most important thing is how tactically is the football player. And sometimes that is very underestimated, because there are some players, when you are 2-0 up or you're 1-0 up and you keep on doing your tricky stuff, I mean, then you have to be tactically wise to keep the ball, get a free kick, get the team to come after you. And Werner is improving in that. And I think there's a very good news for him that Nagelsmann came there. And I think it's also a very wise decision that he has made. He says, if I go, I go abroad. If I stay, I will stay in RB Leipzig, if I stay in Germany. I think that is wise from him. He got a great position there. And I think that RB Leipzig is a very underestimated team. Look at that midfield with Sabitzer, with Leina, with Campbell had a great, great game. So it's a fun to watch.
I saw the, I think it was Salih Hamidzic, back when he was at Bayern, back when Werner was linked with Bayern. He kind of made the point about almost like putting him down a little bit, saying, well, but, you know, if you play for Bayern, other teams sit deep and stuff, and you can't exploit the space behind like he does with his speed. And obviously speed, as you said, is a huge attribute. But those first two goals he scored, that was down to really, really good movement by a striker. I mean, that was out of the Gary Lineker, Jean-Pierre Papin movement. And yes, I'm really dating myself here. But I was thinking about what you said about all the great players Leipzig has, and I've got a friend who talks about how deep they are. I want to turn this around a little bit, because apart from Werner, Upamecano, and Sabitzer, I know that they play really, really well and these guys look devastating. But is there really that much individual talent? In other words, how many of these guys, if they were on other teams, apart maybe from those three who I think are phenomenal, are actually so good that they would perform to the same level? And how much of it is Nagelsmann improving them and having a system that makes them look really, really good?
Well, first of all, I think it's right of you to praise Nagelsmann, and I think it's a good way to do it, to improve players. I mean, the definition of a great coach, and I think I've said that on here before, I think that Klopp in that department is very underestimated because how he's improving players is sensational. But I go more back to the philosophy of how Red Bull likes to take in their players with young, speedy players. And the Salahamidzic quote was true. He said that, and they always compare it with they have one striker in Lewandowski. Having said that, to be fair to Bayern, when Hans Flick came in, Hansi Flick said, I want Werner. That's that kind of player I would like to have here. Of course, I mean, I think the German champion should always look for the best German talents. But, well, they got a great balance in their team. The midfield is major. They got two great, I mean, German national team players at the back. I mean, and you can underestimate them. And you just see how far they come. Paulsen is a great lad. He's working so hard. And I think he's a perfect striker to play alongside him. He's not a goal getter, but he will make Werner better, whoever he plays with. No, they gave him the captain. He's the captain of the team. Sabitzer and Campbell. I mean, the goal that Campbell did with a 1-2 with Paulsen was sensational. It was maybe the best goal of the weekend. Having said that, Mainz didn't look like they bothered. They were like more or less applauding that goal. So, but Nagelsmann, we know that that is the great prospect. And I said in the weekend that the best managers in the world, they are in the Premiership. I mean, if you see the names and the coaches, is unbelievable what's in the Premiership at the moment. But what is interesting to follow in the German football is that you know that Rose and Nagelsmann and all the names, you know they will end up in the big, big clubs one day because these are football brains and they are the football brains of a new generation.
What I like about Werner, I like when he plays behind Poulsen. I think he's better when he plays like that and when he plays a bit higher with Nkunku behind him, for example. And I think you're so right. When he plays as a second striker or even a 9.5, he can make those runs. He's got to be more freedom to make the runs because Poulsen is there with the two centre-backs usually marking him and that kind of thing. So I like that. The other thing I liked about that game is that every single outfield player created a chance in a proper goal chance in the game. So even Klostermann created a chance for Leipzig to score at some point. And I think when you've got 10 players, all your 10 outfield players able to create chances for your team to score, you must do a lot of good things. But maybe the biggest game this weekend, Jan, was Gladbach against Leverkusen. It was a big fight. It would be a big fight for the Champions League places and everything. What did you make of that game?
Well, I think I made something else. I think we are all in love with Kai Havertz because when you see all the much wanted players around Europe, they are quick and they are small. And then you have this guy who, when he was 14 and 15, they didn't know he would even make it into the junior teams because he was growing all over the place. But I think that the first goal is brilliant because he comes one against one at the goalkeeper. There's only one place he can put that through with Sommer. And he just put it there. I mean, he's so relaxed. And the way they've given the captain as well, the captain seems to give him that honor and give him that responsibility. But I think Leverkusen is a team that is sometimes underestimated because you have these four company clubs in Germany with Leverkusen, Wolfsburg, RB Leipzig and Hoffenheim, you have to say as well. And maybe that image of the boring Werks club by Leverkusen. I mean, this team that I have now, I think is brilliant to watch. And they are. I'm happy for Peter Bosch that he didn't have a good stay in his first time in Germany. But Leverkusen now look like a great deal. And winning them first in Bremen and then winning now and I get 7-2 over two games, it's very impressive. And Kai Havertz, I guess we are talking Werner, where will he go, where will he not go? I think that is the most likely man who will leave Bayer Leverkusen. I think we all know that is Kai Havertz. And I'm just excited where he will go. I mean, he's who can you compare with? Is it a Mikael Ballack kind of guy? He's scoring goals for fun. He can play in different positions. And yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, I have to say, I'm not a Peter Bosz guy. He upset me even. But the way they're playing, when you got Havertz up front and you've got, and I think what it is, what offends me is that, you know, you're defending with one guy. You have one defender who is so much better than everybody else in Tapsoba. So like everybody else looks to me looks suspect, and he does weird things. But the way they're going, the way he's really released and is getting the best out of Havertz, I think you have to give. I have to give reluctantly, Jules. I have to give Peter Bosz credit.
Do we think that is Kai Havertz's best position as a false number nine? Because he plays as a number nine, but he's not a number nine. We know that. But do you think, Jan, that is, and Gab as well, do you think that really is best position? Sometimes I watched him and I think I would love him to play a bit deeper, to have a Lewandowski ahead of him, and then he will run the game. And he could also score as a second striker, but he could give assists, he could make more differences. Sometimes he has to drop so deep as a false number nine to get the ball. I just think he's a bit of a shame.
Yeah, I think it's a fair point, but I think he's a young kid. He's born in 99. He will improve. He has always done that in his career, and he will improve, and maybe he will. We don't know what position. And to be fair, how they play at the moment, we say they play 4-4-2 or 3-5-2, the teams, but they play all over the place now. In the old days, we knew where people were playing. But I went to a game with one of my former clubs in Germany, and I only have one. And one of the leaders there said before the game they played Leverkusen, and then Havertz played in midfield. And he said, I won't name who it was, but he said to me, we have good control of Kai Havertz because it's something that he don't like. He don't like us to go early into it, taking him a bit hard in midfield. And they did. They won the game. And Kai Havertz was not to be seen. And I think that Peter Bosz has found out that the best position now as a 20-year-old with that self-confidence he's got is just to give him a free role. He can do whatever he wants. He can drop down a bit. And when you have that kind of balance in the Leverkusen team, and I think sometimes that is very underestimated, I think that the key thing for great teams are the balance in terms of mental strength, in terms of physical strength, different skill of the players. I think that Kai Havertz at the moment now, as a 20-year-old in this Leverkusen team, give him a free role, and now he's building, and I saw building his confidence, and I saw Peter Bosz was asked about, and he said, yeah, he did okay. He did better now than he did against Bremen. Okay, keep calm, carry on.
Weirdo, that guy. Jan, we're going to let you go. I have one last question. You obviously love Kai Havertz. Who do you love more, Kai Havertz or the original Fußballgott, Alexander Meyer?
Of course, I have to go for the Fußballgott.
Correct answer. Thank you so much. All right, Jan was great. But you know what's even better, Jules?
Tell me.
Quick hits.
Yes, let's go.
So, Jules, last week, Lionel Messi said that if they keep playing like Barcelona has been playing, they can't win the Champions League. So then that obviously prompts Quique Setién, his manager, to respond. And he says he disagrees and he thinks they can win the Champions League. Is this actually a story or a giant media creation? Because the media in Barcelona obviously got bored of stories about Neymar and Lautaro. And so let's move on to this one.
No, I think it is a story. I mean, I like it. I think if I was Quique Setién, I would not be comfortable or happy that Messi is saying publicly, we just haven't been good enough. You took over and yeah, we saw a bit of improvement at times, but overall, I'm not sure, you know, and if you're Setién, you think like, right, okay, if, you know, this is Leo Messi talking, you don't agree, no?
They've been playing badly. He's saying when we play badly, we can't win the Champions League. We need to play better. Yeah, he's not saying like it's Setién's fault. Why are you attacking Messi?
Well, no, but he's like, it's not Setién. Whose fault is it if it's not Setién? Is your manager? He set up the team. It's his idea. It's his philosophy.
First of all, he hadn't been there that long. And second of all, it's the players who are out on the pitch who are the ones playing. And Suarez injury. Well, I mean, all these things coming together.
Yeah, but why
is Messi not? You need to play better.
Well, Messi could have done that a bit differently than just the way he did, no? I mean, I like Setién. I love Messi. I love Setién. I like the strong philosophy that he has. But if Leo Messi comes out and said, you know what, we're not playing good enough, surely this has to be a criticism of the manager, right? Surely.
I didn't read it that way. I didn't read it that way, and I think this is media stirring the pot again.
Right. Okay. We see when they come back. Manchester United talks with Shanghai Shenhua over extending Ojan Igalo's loan past June the 30th. Have stalled. Gab, you warned us this might happen, not just with Igalo, but with a lot of other players who are out of contract or when the loan finishes on June the 30th.
I go back to this, and yes, we flagged this up 2 months ago. We had Daniel G on the show, remember? Yeah. Talking to us about this, the June 30th cliff edge when loans expire, when players go out of contract, people are like, oh, well, that's fine. They'll just extend them. Like, you can't extend the freaking loans unilaterally. Adrian Igalo is not a Manchester United player. United have to extend their deal with Shanghai Shenhua. It's as simple as that. And Shanghai Shenhua can say no.
Yeah, and look, and they have their season as well. Yeah. Shanghai have their season on. It's not, if they had nothing on, it wouldn't be a problem.
I mean, look, I think this will get rid of, first of all, much as I love Adrian Igalo, I don't think he's central to United's plans. if Rashford is fit, equally, I think, it works both ways. Because if you're United, you can be like, no, you know what, Dean Henderson, why don't you come back instead of playing with Sheffield United so that, you know, we get a little bit of an edge in the race for the Champions League. So, look, but this is something that needs to be sorted out. And I think there's going to be – I'm not going to blame a club for doing what's in their best interest given the situation. And in some cases, that might mean not renewing the loan. Let's see how this turns out. Now, Jules, you are a resident expert in Covidiocy.
Yes.
In identifying it and studying it. You've got a lot of experience with Kyle Walker and Moise Kean and Jack Grealish. Tell us about that barbecue in Sevilla.
Well, it's funny how you could have fun with friends and put it on social media, and then he comes back to haunt you because you're not allowed. You're not allowed, Mr. Banega, De Jong.
You knew it was going to be Banega. You knew it was going to be
Banega. In Banega's house, Banega's wife putting the photos out and then deleting them quickly when she realized that actually they were not allowed to do it, and then even less publicizing it.
You don't mention the Italian guy, of course.
And Vasquez as well.
Franco Vasquez, yes. El Mudo.
El Mudo. What's funny is that, you know, you wonder what the Young family, the Young and his wife, doing with all the Argentine/Italians. Not even sure what kind of language they were speaking. But anyway, the barbecue, you know, you go all invited and that kind of stuff.
I was wondering about, did they just invite Luke de Jong because just to make him feel good because he missed so many goals? Like, is he good at barbecuing?
Because, you know, when you really want to be with the cool kids, and you know, really, and you really try your hard, and then one day they say, okay, you know, come over for the barbecue. But yeah.
I'm sorry, Luke, we're not saying you're not cool, but like, if you were to have a raging night out, you would probably you obviously choose Ever Banega would be your top choice out of those.
Yeah, yeah.
You go for Lucas Ocampos because remember, people used to think he was the next Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yeah.
Even El Mudo Vasquez, even though he's the mute, you would go for him.
Yeah, yeah.
Would probably be your last choice. But you know what? Good for you, but bad for you, because this is stupid and irresponsible.
Yeah, it is true. It is true. Well, UEFA boss Alexander Seferin says UEFA might consider a luxury tax as part of financial fair play. Gab, can you explain just a bit more what it's about and what you think of it?
Well, luxury tax basically means is it's you have a salary cap, you have a spending limit on wages that applies. You can go beyond that limit, unlike a salary cap, but if you go beyond that limit, for every dollar more that you spend, you have to put a dollar or some amount into some sort of central pot that then gets redistributed. Now, I don't mind luxury taxes. I think they serve the purpose because they bring costs down. I think I would mind it if I was a player. You'd have to be really careful about where you set the limits, how you set the limits. The only thing I would caution against is if you Google the words Seferin and luxury tax, you'll find an article from 2019 where he says, like, yes, we're considering a luxury tax, and an article from 2017 where he says, yes, we're considering a luxury tax. And you look hard enough, you'll find my article when I sat down with him, I think it was in Kiev, where he says, yes, we're considering a luxury tax. So, yeah, they've all been considering this for a long time. But, okay. I mean, it's a lot of consideration there. Olympique Lyonnais boss Jean-Michel Aulas says the French must be idiots for ending the season so soon, and that he swears on his children's heads that he'd be saying the exact same thing if they'd been second in the league. Jules, do you believe him? And are you one of those idiots he's talking about?
I believe him. I think it was idiotic to not to stop the season, but to do it so early and not give us a bit more time to review the situation and the context and then make a decision later on. Wait maybe for the Bundesliga to go back, see what the other leagues were doing, and then decide. Now we look also like idiots because everybody else would play, almost everybody else apart from Belgium and Holland and us. And then I don't think that's good. I don't think that's good economically for our club. I don't think it's good for the image of French football either. And I think Aulas is trying to push hard now to review that decision. I don't think he will go anywhere, but he's trying. The issue I have with Aulas is that initially he came out by saying, let's have a playoff. Let's do playoffs. We can have playoffs to win the league. We can have a playoff to go down, playoff for European places. Obviously, Lyon, his team that was out of European places, would be in the playoff to try to win the league. And instead, if he had spent all his energy and resources fighting to start the season again, whatever way, but starting it, instead of coming up with this silly idea of a playoff, which at that time is not like your playoff idea, but his playoff idea was completely stupid, maybe things would have been different. Instead, he went the wrong way and he really, really got cross. A lot of people got cross with him for proposing that idea. And I think instead he should have thought to just resume the season whatever way, and maybe we would not be in this situation right now. Manchester United's net debt increased by £127.4 million over the past year, Gab, but they paid a dividend of £11 million with the £8.5 million going to the Glazer family. Are they getting value for money, Gab? And is it all worrying a bit?
I mean, look, this is an age-old thing. It's almost too easy. Manchester United fans really, really hate the Glazers. Glazers have taken in excess of £100 million out of their team. They've loaded the team up with debt. The Glazers would be saying, yes, but look, we've also been hugely profitable over all these years. And then you go back to them and say, yeah, but you've generally sucked and been a laughing stock and punched below your weight since Sir Alex left. So this kind of goes round and round. The reality is, if you allow people who have a certain investment profile to go and buy your club, then you have to allow them, and they float the stock exchange, and they're allowed to go and issue dividends. These people obviously don't care about public opinion. You know, remember, they're happy to spin a story about how, oh, United donated £1 million to, you know, NHS workers, and then, hey, look, but I took £8.5 million out in dividend. They've obviously added some expertise, but, you know, again, for me, this is just everything about the Glazer takeover was wrong. You shouldn't be allowed to take a club in that way. Now they're there. The appetite to get them out has obviously all gone away. The ones who felt strongest about it now support FC United of Manchester. The others have grown silent. And, you know, the authorities missed the boat on that one, I think. Now, Joe Hart says that all he wants to do is to be, quote, a big part of a club. Jules, this is pretty sad and pretty incredible because he's only 33 years old and he has played as much Premier League football as you have since 2018. How did he fall so far, so fast?
Well, one, maybe he was never that really good. For me, that's the best opinion. Don't roll your eyes. Maybe he was not that great.
He was capped for England and he was winning team of the season in the Premier League and all this other stuff.
Well, maybe at a time where they were not very good goalkeepers, English compared to, unlike now,
David James, Rob Green. What do you say?
Exactly. And then maybe he made the wrong decisions as well at times. I think going to Torino, maybe it was, you know, not the greatest of ideas. Going to Burnley was not much better either.
Sorry, the Burnley one, I got to jump in. You're going to a club that has Tom Heaton, who I think is one of the top two English goalkeepers when he's fit, and Nick Pope, who's been capped for England, and you think, oh, this is a great place to relaunch my career. You know, when you've got some Muppet Show keepers at other clubs.
Yeah,
that I never understood.
You wonder why Burnley went to get him either. You know, like, that didn't make sense.
Injury.
I know, but still, you know. And now he's 33, you're right, for a keeper, he's still quite young. I don't know who would go and sign him. Whatever his wages are, surely he's not cheap. If he's ready to lower his wages, yeah, surely. But still, you when you read the interview that he gave this weekend, it still feels like he believes he can play in a big club, you know, play big games and stuff like that. I don't know what big club who plays in Europe, for example, is ready to give Joe Hart another go. I don't think so. Gab, there are reports that said that Inter Milan are very close to signing Edinson Cavani, with Mauro Icardi going the other way. I'm actually writing this afternoon about it on the website as well. Does this mean that Lautaro Martinez will also leave Inter to go to Barca? So you'll have the three ones all happening.
This is your honorary Paris boy.
Yes,
right?
Of course.
First of all, I think Cavani would be a terrible signing for Inter.
No, what?
They're talking a 3-year deal. He's going to want an absolute mint of money, and he's going to sit on the bench because this is the thing. You're not going to play Cavani and Lautaro, Cavani and Lukaku together. It's just not going to happen, right?
No.
I think the reality, I don't think this has much to do with Lautaro Martinez because Inter went into last year with just three strikers. One of them was Alexis Sanchez. He's on loan. They're not going to keep him. And so you needed a third striker. If you can get Cavani on the cheap and you like him and Conte likes him, whatever, so be it. But he's going to cost you a ton of money and wages, and it's another freaking three-year deal. And what have we learned from all those stupid long-term, high-priced contracts that Inter give out is these guys never go away. Nainggolan, Perisic, all the – I mean, I simply don't get it. I mean, he's the last piece of the puzzle.
You're harsh on him.
Whatever, you know what?
He can you a good 2 years still. Even if he's not your starting number nine, he can give you a good 2 years.
He's going to come on starter wages. This is the I think this is actually most likely this is Cavani's people putting this out there. Maybe they had preliminary talks, I don't know, and hoping for others to come out of the woodwork and maybe make another offer. I don't see why the guy would want to go to Inter to be somebody's backup anyway. I mean, I think he's made enough money in his career, right? Surely Cavani would want to go someplace where he's going to start, right?
Well, not at a big club. Yeah, I think he knows that. I think it'd be very hard for him at 33 to start in a top, top club. I think Atletico Madrid, for me, still, if they really still want him, that's the best choice for him.
Sorry, we talked about Seville earlier, right?
Yeah.
Who is Seville center forward? Luke de Jong? Do you think that maybe Edinson Cavani might fancy his chances at starting ahead of Luke de Jong? Plus better weather in Seville?
Yeah, do you think Sevilla and Monchi would give him 12 million a year? I don't think so.
No, that's the thing.
Yeah, well, yeah. So
Show some pride. Yeah. Show some pride and go and show me that you want
football. Let's see. We'll see where he ends up.
Now, much-hyped U.S. international right-back Sergino Dest has been linked to many clubs, including Barcelona and Bayern Munich. But he showed Barca colors in his most recent social media post. Does this matter, Jules?
Yeah, maybe it does. Maybe it was a little hint. I think he's too clever to have done that with nothing in the back of his mind, to be fair, because Barca, as we know, trying to offload Semedo and looking for a right back. The thing, and I'm sorry, Serginho, to break your heart, I don't think Barca can afford you. I mean, they certainly cannot afford you and Neymar and Lautaro and Pjanic and all the other players they've been linked with. They would have to make a choice at some point. You might be in the choices and it might still happen. I don't think so. I think they will do Lautaro Martinez, and then that would be it, pretty much. Unless they can swap you with, I don't know, whoever Ajax would be interested. Like, let me think, Rakitic or, you know, any of those, like, old dudes. I would love to see Dest at Barcelona. I think he's a very talented kid, and let's hope that he makes the right choice if he has the opportunity.
How about Dest for a two-year loan of Ansu Fati?
Oh, my God. That's a great idea.
Yeah, Fati with a recompra of some kind. It'd be awesome.
Oh, man. Yeah. Right. Sad news now, Gab, with the former Inter boss, Gigi Simeone, being another victim of the coronavirus, passed away at the weekend. How do you remember him when he was at Inter and through his whole career in Italian football?
I mean, he's a guy who bounced around a lot. I think he was always a gentleman. At Inter, I think he'll forever be identified for the fact that he was there during those years in the late 90s when the team were spending like there was no tomorrow, pre-Hector Cooper. Those were the years of poison, as they're known, that intense rivalry with Juve. And, of course, he'll be known as a guy who was voted manager of the year by his colleagues in Serie A and then fired by Inter almost immediately afterwards, which I think says a lot about how Inter were run during the Moratti era, or really how Inter have been run for most of the past 50 years, frankly.
I mean, he was the manager when, as you said, when they won the 98 UEFA Cup, and I was there. I was at the Parc des Princes that night when Ronaldo was phenomenal against Lazio, the 3-0 win, and it's one of the best individual performances I've seen live in my career as a journalist and life as a kid, because I was only 17 at the time. But he and I think as a team as well, they were so good. And I mean, they had an incredible team, really. But that game,
with so much talent, and yet that UEFA Cup really is the only significant thing they have to show for it. And, but for me, and again, it's not entirely their fault, because anybody who knows the story of those years and Mark Giuliano running into to Ronaldo and whatever. Yeah. But you know, it's he's a guy who got a raw deal, I think, overall from his club and from football in general.
No, you're right.
Now, Manchester United are reportedly taking legal action against Football Manager. Jules, I don't really fully get the story. Can you explain it to me?
Yes, it's a weird one. Well, weird one because of the timing, maybe. And as well, you wonder, really, what do you need to do that?
Lawyers. What does it say in the Bible? I'm going to quote you again from the Bible. It's easier for a camel to pass through the eye of the needle than for a lawyer to enter the kingdom of heaven. Exactly. Seriously.
I know. And Manchester United lawyers will be very busy now with Football Manager and Football Manager lawyers to respond. Basically, United not happy that Football Manager is using not the official crest, because for that you need to pay Manchester United a lot of money to be able to use their name and the crest, the logo, in whatever you do commercially. But they're not happy as well that you're using a logo that has the same color. You know, red and white, and maybe it's too close to the real one or too close to United, things like that. And again, they don't think that you should do that, that you're allowed to do that either. And that's why they're suing Football Manager, who, as we heard a few weeks ago with Dr. Tom Markham, our friend, he's even more popular now in coronavirus time and is in this lockdown. And maybe that's why United thinking there's an opportunity for us there. But I don't really understand it, to be fair. Why would you go after Football Manager like that?
Why don't they hire a bunch of nerds to go and program their own game, where it's just Manchester United in a league with a bunch of made-up names, and then it's rigged so they always win? I mean,
they always win. Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
Well, no. Seriously, I mean, let me give the Glazers an idea for free. With the number of fans that they have around the world, who'd be willing to plunk down money for this, it would be awesome, right? And then they could claim that they have a competing product that is legitimately being hurt by Football Manager's use of their likeness, and then the weird club logo or whatever. I don't know. We should just go back. Football Manager, just go back. Just call it Red United or something, right? Going back like they did in the early days, and you know, and then go and change the names. Like you could have Odion Pigalo and, you know, Bruno Hernandez.
That, for many Paul years, Fogba. That has been the thing, because you were not allowed to do anything else. And you know, clearly, again, this is an issue here. Well, finally, Gab, Jordan Ibe says he has no regrets over how his career has unfolded since joining Bournemouth from Liverpool in 2016 for £15 million at the time. Bournemouth presumably do have regrets, since they're not renewing his contract, which expires in just over a month. Gab, he has just started 34 league games over 4 years and has played just over 50 minutes of Premier League football this year. He also had his hair cut done last weekend, like our friend Serge Aurier, breaking the lockdown rules as well. I mean, I have to say, I don't know why you put that question in there. I mean, why Jordan Ibe just right now? Did you wake up this morning thinking like, do you know what? I need to talk about Jordan Ibe. Is that what happens?
Yeah, because I'm struck by somebody who comes out and he says no regrets. You know, a modicum of introspection. Come out and blame Eddie Howe. Come out if you want. Come out and blame yourself.
But yeah, because he knows it's his fault. That's
find a reason. Well, then go and say, Eddie Howe treated me badly. June 30th, this is one dude, by the way, June 30th, Cliff Edge or not, he's not going to get his contract renewed. He shouldn't get his contract renewed. They should kick this guy as far away as possible. And then hopefully he can go and restart his career somewhere else. The guy's 24 years old. This is not like your buddy Joe Hart that we talked about earlier. This is a guy who played for Liverpool, cap for England under 21, looked really, really good. Clearly something went wrong. I just hope something good comes out of it. Maybe Bournemouth can look at the way they recruit. Maybe they can look at the way they treated him. Maybe they'll come to the conclusion they could have done something better. I just find it extraordinary. And the fact that this dude wouldn't go on loan as well, you know, when he obviously wasn't getting playing time, that doesn't reflect well on him. I'll be curious to see. Somebody will take a gamble on him.
Yeah, of course.
But this is a lot of money down the drain for Bournemouth. Not for the first time either. All right, Jules, that brings Quick Hits to a conclusion, but it's your favorite part of the show next.
Yeah.
It's time for the S-Team. S-Team. Take it away, Jules.
Yeah, let's go, Gab. Thank you again for all your tweets and messages about the S-Team. We had loads today. we said before, I think maybe the letter M was very good. Obviously, there was a lot of potential players there. But S, I mean, come on. Hundreds and hundreds of possibilities of names. Let's start with Seye Omijora, who has an All-African. The S team, he's got Salim in goal, Seka, Salif Sane, Saïs and Sabali at the back, Salah, Skiri, Saive and Saar in midfield, and Slimani and Samata up front. Greg Munro, well done to you, my friend. You need a double S team. Ooh. Every name here is first name and surname in S. And
that's double points, right?
That's double points. And this is surely one of the best we've ever had. Salvatore Sirigu in goal, obviously double S. Steven Cessignon from Fulham at the back. Salif Sane, Stefan Savic, and Sana Sisai from Amiens in the back four. Suat Serda from Schalke in midfield. Stefano Sturaro, Stefano Sensi, and Sergi Samper in midfield. And up front, Scott Sinclair and Sander Svensson. I mean, I have to say, he even has the manager as double S with Stalle Solbakken from Copenhagen. I mean, like, Craig, my new hero. Well done. This is fantastic. A full double S team with full double points. We've got our friend Ebet 16 with an all Icelandic S team. Ram in goal. Sigurd Bjornsson, Sigurdsson, Sverrisson, Skulason at the back. Stein Dawson, Sigurdsson, Singer Jonsson, and Sigurdsson again, Gylfi in midfield. And then the front three of Sigborgsson and Sigurdarson. Well done to him as well. Who else do we have? We have Kunnar Ramlarsson as well. Maybe he's Icelandic too, I don't know. Who has Sommer in goal, Spinazzola, Thiago Silva, Skriniar, and Sandro at the back. Saul Sabitzer in midfield. And then Sterling, Bernardo Silva, Sancho, and Mo Salah as a striker. So well done to him. What about Sophie? Do you have Sophie's team?
I do. How about this lady's 11? She has Caelan Sheridan in goal at the back, Casey Short, Sam Staub, Becky Sauerbrunn, a world champion, I believe, and Aya Samashima at the back. Then in midfield, one of my all-time, I don't follow him so much, but I was so struck by this by this woman, Christine Sinclair, Canada's finest.
Oh, of course, amazing.
It's like, seriously, you want to talk about? I always go back to this. I saw them play at the Olympics when you're in London. I forget who they were playing, and you want to talk like one man team? Rarely, or one person team, I should say. Rarely have I seen an athlete, a footballer, carry a team on her back the way she did that day. Anyway, she's in midfield with Sherida Spitzer, Caroline Seeger, Leah Schuller, and up front, Bunny Shaw and Yuika Sugasawa.
Nice. And Miguel has sent his team, and it's a special for you, Gab, because This is an all-Italian woman S team. Only your girls in this team. In goal, you've got Katia Schroffenegger from Florentia at the back. Angelica Sofia from Roma, Emma Severini from Roma as well, Salva from Juventus and Santoro from Sassuolo in midfield, Rosella Sardu from Hellas Verona, Santi from Inter and Simonetti from Empoli, and then the front three of Salvatore from Milan, Sabatino at Sassuolo and Seturini at Roma. Well done, Miguel. And talking about women's team, just before we hear yours, Gab, Ramsey has sent mixed men and women S11, Sommer in goal, Semedo, Schneiderbeck, Saliba and Saka at the back, Sherida, Spitze, Jill Scott and Georgia Stanway in midfield, and then up front, Sancho, Salah and Sterling.
All right, you want my S team, don't you?
Go on. I'm really curious to hear yours.
In goal, I went with, drumroll, Strakosha from Lazio, because I think he's had a good season. He's a guy who's had his ups and downs as a goalkeeper I really, really like. Yeah. At the back, representing one of my adopted alternate countries, of course, Japan. Sakai from from Marseille. What's wrong with Sakai? What?
No, okay.
Well, you want Nelson Semedo?
Oh, go on. No, I don't have Semedo. I don't have Sakai either. Go on.
All right, my center backs, I have Galactus, the behemoth, Nicolas Zule, alongside the Mr. Vegan, Chris Smalling, left back, Leo Spinazzola, who's, again, another dude with a lot of ups and downs. Midfield, the pocket rocket, Stefano Sensi, Marcel Sabitzer.
Yes.
And, of course, I had to have David Silva. I know it's not very original, but come on, he's Merlin. Up front, no argument, Jadon Sancho, Luis Suarez, and of course, Mohamed Salah.
Nice. That's a nice one. Okay, hear me out. I've got Jan Sommer in goal because I love his name. It's a great name, and I love his haircut. I've got Djibril Sidibé at right back, Everton legend, obviously. My two centre backs are Thiago Silva, because Thiago, I'm sorry, it's nearly over. It's nearly finished for you, but still, you will always be in our hearts. And William Saliba, who is a future Arsenal captain. You've heard it here first.
How does this two
heard
the
here
team?
First. You've heard it first. Next Arsenal, future Arsenal captain, uh-huh. William Saliba. And at left back, staying with Arsenal, is Saka.
There's too many Arsenal players in this team.
No, there isn't. In midfield, I've got Renato Sanchez, obviously, in the holding role. But, you know, he can do whatever he wants.
Yeah. Okay.
I've got Sabitzer with you because, you know, I like the energy. And Bernardo Silva, who is a young David Silva in many respects. So we can have him. And then up front, I've got Sancho and Salah, like you. But I don't have Luis Suarez, who is overweight and eating too much. I've got Patrick Schick, who is the most elegant, suave force number nine you could find.
He certainly is elegant and suave. You know, not exactly a model of consistency, but hey.
No, but I don't care. You know what? I give him a pass.
All right, there you have it. That's the S team. That wraps up our show for today. Thank you so much for spending your time with me and with Jules. Catch you Thursday and stay safe and stay alert and
always
feel free to drive 250 miles to go and see your relatives if you've got childcare issues.